listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes, 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 yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a head, son! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
CR7 is in footballing heaven as Cristiano Ronaldo finally takes the Ballon d'Or once again, 5 years after his last success as World Player of the Year. The tears were flowing, Lionel Messi was groaning, and we have plenty to talk about FIFA's spectacular celebration of 2013's football. Zlatan Ibrahimovic wins the Puskas Award, and we take a look at the FIFA World 11. There is plenty to get into when it comes to FIFA's decision making from last night. And we also take a look back at Aston Villa and their sloppy play in that first 45 minutes against Arsenal. But does that win make them championship contenders still? We will have a look at that and the fallout from Villarreal against Real Sociedad here on World Football Daily. Welcome to the show on Tuesday's edition. I am Oliver the Deuce Wilson, bringing you the news, the many views from around the world of football. I've not been doing the date for a while, so I'll tell you it's Tuesday the 14th of January, the day after Cristiano Ronaldo was crowned as a Ballon d'Or winner. We're going to get into all of that a little later on. It's basically all the stuff that comes out from the voting process makes everybody look like a bickering child, is the problem that I have with it. And similarly, the voting process for the FIFA World 11, there are a number of changes. I think there's a good three changes at least that almost every football journalist that I've heard from would change to that World 11. Yet, so how can so many professionals be wrong, or are we the ones as football journalists that are wrong and football fans that are wrong when we look at this World 11 and start critiquing it and twisting it in different ways to create what we think is our best 11? We will take a look at that, I'm sure, in a little closer detail, but it was an hour and a half or so that you'll never get back. That Ballon d'Or ceremony, FIFA just dragged these things out, and I'm going to see how one man was able to get through the whole kind of 90-minute process of it also. When we get our first guest of the day on the line in a few minutes' time, Carlo Gaganessi from Goal.com will be joining us to talk about the fall of Allegri at AC Milan, a little bit of European football in general, a look back at Villarreal's performance last night, and of course, we'll get into the Ballon d'Or celebrations also. So a big show coming our way, and of course, Rafa will be joining us later on. In the meantime, Arsenal getting a 2-1 win last night against Aston Villa at Villa Park. No repeat of the opening day blues that Arsenal faced when they met Villa down at the Emirates on the first day of the season. Jack Wilshere and Olivier Giroud with two goals in about 60 seconds or so to put Arsenal 2-0 ahead. Christian Benteke adding a late one in the 76th minute to pull Villa within touching distance, and had opportunities as well to find that equaliser at Villa Park. Paul Lambert's been talking about how that goal for Benteke is a massive deal after it ends his scoreless streak at the Villains this season. It's not been the fantastic start after a flourishing finish at the end of last year for Benteke, and Lambert saying that this goal means that Benteke's getting back to his best once again. Do you agree with that? I said all last season, the first half of the year, that Benteke just wasn't firing them in, wasn't good enough, and was missing too many chances up at Villa Park at the beginning of last season. Then in the second half of the year, he started to find his rhythms, find his groove, but the fact that he's not been able to repeat that and carry that on into this season, I think shows that he's not the finished article just yet. Not like a certain other Belgium striker that we are big fans of here on this show, of course, Romelu Lukaku, who continues to play excellent football up at Everton. And I think any of us here at World Football Daily would be saying that that man is our man to lead the line for Belgium in the World Cup. At this moment, if Benteke has a fantastic finish to the season again, though, maybe, just maybe, he can save Villa from a relegation battle, and he can actually get himself back into our starting 11 for Belgium's World Cup squad, although he has been starting ahead of Lukaku for a lot of the friendlies and World Cup qualifiers of recent date. Arsenal with this 2-1 win, is it one of those performances you think that basically showed them to be a title contender? You know, grinding out a gritty win, holding on at Villa Park on the road on a Monday night. We know that Monday night football under the floodlights is a real kind of, as Graham Hunter said yesterday on the show, you know, it's a big deal in England, and you do get those kind of freak results, much like a cup upset. And when the magic of the FA Cup, I think you can also talk about the magic of Monday night football in England, because you do get those surprising little results. Look at Everton against Manchester United on the opening day of the season, opening Monday night football of the season last year. That fantastic win at Goodison Park for Everton, and I think that it's right. You can get these kind of anomalies of results, but Arsenal getting a 2-1 win, and as I say, being able to hold on. They didn't look solid, they didn't look that comfortable though, did they, towards the end of that game. Villa were able to start turning the screws slightly, and you get the feeling that a Villa side with a few more players kind of on form. Weimann's been off form in the last few weeks, Benteke as well, like Bonglehor's been misfiring, Delph hasn't looked like he was playing at the start of the season. Once they get these players back and firing, I mean, if they'd had that last night, they could have got something out of that Arsenal game. So are Arsenal, do you think they are still title contenders after that game last night, or has it showed too many weaknesses, or does it show that fiery determination to get 3 points when your back's against the wall, when you're under pressure? Let us know. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 310-909-8483 is the rant line, and of course the Facebook page as well. Giovanni Dos Santos over in Spain, meanwhile, last night putting on a stellar show. Graham Hunter pretty much set us up perfectly for this game, because he said Spain, Monday night football, not a big deal like in England. You know, it's very easy for these players to think we're playing a late game on a Monday, nobody's really going to be watching, let's just kind of go through the motions, get this sorted, go out, blah blah blah. It's not like a Saturday or Sunday afternoon when there are kind of the whole of Spain is sat watching La Liga and that top flight football. And you almost had two completely different attitudes to last night's game. You had Real Sociedad, who turned up with that attitude, that, well, let's just get this done with, over and out. It's a Monday night game, we want to be home, etc., etc. And you have Villarreal that turned out as in, well, let's make sure we don't slip up and get complacent on a Monday night. Let's take this game to them. Giovanni Dos Santos grabbing two and putting on, as I say, a fantastic show. I was following Kim Tate's tweets, actually, last night. Very good friend of the show. And a big Mexican football fan. And she was saying that on her lunch break, she just got to catch an hour or so of this game, and was absolutely mesmerised by the way that Giovanni Dos Santos was playing. Uche as well grabbing two, and Moises adding a fifth for Villarreal as they blasted past Real Sociedad 5-1, 3-0 up at half-time, 3-0 up inside 33 minutes. You definitely got value for money if you were watching or went to see that game last night. I unfortunately wasn't able to watch it, and only been able to watch the highlights today over the internet, because for some reason in England, they decided not to put this game on television. Absolute disgrace. Can't see why they did that. And in Serie A as well, Sampdoria with a 3-0 win over Udinese. And Inter managing only a draw at home against Chievo. My little prayers are answered, because I did ask that the Inter would fall last night. Sampdoria able to jump ahead of Udinese in the league table. Udine down in 15th now. Not a great start to their season. Just one win in their last five games. Poor run of form for them at the moment. Sampdoria now right on the heels of Milan in 11th place. In the meantime, that point able to put Inter just above Verona, who lost on the weekend, and Inter up there in the Europa League spots on goal difference alone at this moment in time. A man is going to talk to us about a little bit of Serie A football, especially about AC Milan, and a little bit about the Ballon d'Or as well. And I'm very interested to know how he just got through, if he watched that ceremony, that the Ballon d'Or ceremony, without falling asleep, or what he used to entertain himself during the long padded out breaks that involving Ruud Gullit's disgraceful acting that weren't helped by Fernanda's, I think her name was Fernanda, the lady who was hosting it with Ruud Gullit, her woefully wooden kind of acting alongside him. Rude would come out with the... I'm sure you watched it. And if you didn't, Rude would come out with these... Oh, and it's like back in my day. Ha, 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 ha. And over-the-top exaggerating. But at least throwing a little bit of kind of emotion into his presentation. And Fernandia just sat there, stood there, would go, yes, thank you, Rude. Well, here we go. And, oh, Rude, you're so funny. Ha, 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 ha. Laughs at audience. Ha, ha. I mean, it was terrible. Considering we had the Golden Globes this week, the acting on show by FIFA's hosts last night was atrocious. So let's get into a little bit of all things last night with our guest for the show today. He's a man who we always enjoy coming on, a cheeky chappy who works for Goal.com and knows about all things European football, and especially about the Italians and Serie A. Joining us here today, Mr. Carlo Garganessi from Goal.com. Carlo, mate, it's a pleasure to have you back on board. How are you doing, my man?
Yeah, a bit of a hangover from yesterday. It was a long, long day. And yeah, I just about managed to stay awake during the Ballon d'Or ceremony.
Was it coffee, Red Bull, pep pills, something even stronger from over the counter? I mean, what do you use to try and just to get you through the filler that is those FIFA ceremonies and draws and presentations and all these things that get put on by the governing bodies of football?
I think all of that put together. I think a cocktail of everything.
They do love just throwing in kind of useless little video montages. I mean, it's not like showing us a montage of each individual who's up for the Ballon d'Or is going to influence the voting in any way, shape or form. And it's not like we've forgotten how good they were over the last year either. I mean, as a journalist and as a football fan, do you want to just see it done as a, you know, half-hour job? Let's get these awards out, dished out, a few speeches and done and dusted, and we can all go home a little bit happier rather than the presentation and the pageantry around it?
And I think it's good to make a little bit of an event of it. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, yesterday it did go on a little bit too long. And kind of what annoys me is when they reward their own people. And Pele is the best example of that. I mean, obviously, absolutely legendary player. But everybody knows that Pele is an establishment man. He's a FIFA man. And it just seems a bit fake when they're kind of rewarding their own person. And when they showed the little video montage of his career, I just found that a little bit too much, really.
Do you think Maradona will ever be given one by FIFA, because he's the stereotypical anti-FIFA man in terms of what he represents and has represented in football?
Absolutely, still a chance of that happening. I think even if they tried to give him an award, he wouldn't accept it. I mean, I think you remember it happened in 2000 when FIFA did a Player of the Century award, and they opened up the vote to the public, and Maradona won the vote. And obviously, because Maradona is so anti-establishment, anti-FIFA, FIFA weren't going to accept that. So they ended up creating a second award. one that was from so-called journalists, but it was just basically FIFA giving it to their man, Pele. And then the other award was the People's Award, which Maradona obviously won. And Maradona refused to turn up, or he turned up, collected his award and walked straight off stage. I can't remember exactly which one it was, but he made it pretty clear that the whole thing was a farce. So not much chance of that happening again.
It's always entertainment in some way, shape or form with these kind of ceremonies that FIFA put on. Carlo, I mean, first and foremost, let's stay on this topic before we move into Serie A and the Allegri dismissal and the problems that continue to hamper AC Milan. And let's stay on this. The World 11, first and foremost, we're going to get into this a lot in the show later on, but it's what are people like Sergio Ramos and Dani Alves still doing in this World 11 when there are better players to fill these roles? I mean, you look at for instance someone like Sebastian Schweinsteiger should surely be in that midfield. There are plenty of controversies with this starting 11.
For me, it's just an absolute farce, the whole thing. I think it's absolutely got zero credibility whatsoever. And what's really disheartening about it is that, I mean, it's voted for by professional players. And I think it was 45,000 professional players voted for it last year. I think the number went up to over 60,000 this year. And it kind of makes you lose, you know, faith in democracy, really, because it's just, I mean, did they watch any football last year? Did they watch any football? I mean, Dani Alves and Xavi, I mean, they shouldn't even be in the top 30 to 40 players, you know, in their position, let alone the being voted into a best 11. And Sergio Ramos the same. And it's just laughable, really.
Do you wish that there was more input, say, from the fans and the journalists as well, rather than it just being the players voting for what seems to be, and when we look over the kind of the Ballon d'Or voting as well later on in the show, I mean, it all looks very tactical, like pick your mates style.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I would like to see who voted for who with the FIFA Pro. Just out of interest, really, just to see who the players were voting. But I mean, we see from the Ballon d'Or voting that a lot of coaches and captains of the national teams are voting for their own club teammates or their national teammates. I mean, Buffon voted for Pirlo, and Pirlo was nowhere close to being the best player in the world in 2013. And then you see that across the board. But I think it is pretty clear that players are voting based on reputation and for their mates, really. And it's the only way that you can describe some of the players who made that 11. No other way really describing it.
I mean, the original Ballon d'Or was seen as such a credible trophy to be given when it was kind of first introduced. And now, as you say, it's become almost farcical. Is it time that we looked for another kind of new status of... I don't want to say you created a new trophy or anything like that, because as soon as you create something new, it always seems very artificial. But should we be looking at some other kind of status symbol to show who are the best players in the world in some way, shape or form?
I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, I don't want to come out and say that the Ballon d'Or has lost all credibility. I mean, I myself wrote a feature yesterday where I said that the Ballon d'Or, the second Ballon d'Or victory for Ronaldo has made him an all-time great. And when I wrote that, I didn't mean necessarily because of him winning the second Ballon d'Or. I think that it almost gave me an excuse to put that piece out. But I think his achievements over the last few years, away from him winning this individual title, means that he will go down in history as an all-time great. I just think that we've got to the point now where I don't know how important these individual trophies really are. I don't know. I don't know if there really is a perfect way of going about it. I mean, Arsene Wenger hates these individual prizes. He's come out and campaigned against them for many years. And when you see like Ronaldo versus Messi, I mean, football is a team sport at the end of the day. And I think that maybe, you know, we do need to have to look at how these prizes are rewarded, I think.
I suppose if everybody was voting for a team of the year, it would hands down be Bayern Munich. And are you a little surprised that there weren't more winners from German football in general, when everybody's saying that it has been the best league in the world, or Dortmund and Bayern have been the dominant forces in Europe, at least for the last kind of 2 years or so, and is the model that everybody should be looking at? Are you surprised that it's still the Spanish sides in general that are kind of dominating the European scene when it comes to these sorts of things?
Oh, absolutely. There's a massive bias still towards the Clásico teams of Madrid and Barcelona. And, you know, Champions League semi-final, Bayern absolutely hammered Barcelona 7-0 over two legs. Yet it comes to the FIFA Pro World 11 and Barcelona somehow got four players where Bayern have only got three, even though they won the treble when they won, six trophies over the course of 2013. Mm. And you can understand to an extent with an individual prize like the Ballon d'Or, when someone like Ronaldo's winning, even though he didn't win anything in 2013, you can kind of understand, because it's their individual performances more than team performances. But when you've got a World 11, to then have the best team by a distance in 2013, only having three players less than Barcelona, I mean, just, you know, it's farcical.
Let's move away from the frustrations of the evening yesterday and get into the frustrations, if you will, of Italian football. AC Milan on the weekend suffering a almost humiliating loss to Sassuolo, thanks to four goals from their young 19-year-old striker Berardi. I don't think any of us saw this coming, Carlo, but is it the right thing to do to have got rid of Allegri after this disappointing result? He was already going at the end of the season anyway.
Tricky one. I think if their plan was to appoint Clarence Seedorf at the end of the season anyway, which it looks like it was, then pushing it forward, you know, maybe it was the right decision. It might give them a little bit of an injection ahead of the Champions League second round game against Atletico Madrid, which as it stands, it's not going to be pretty. If Milan are playing as they are now in February, then they could get hurt in that game. So this might give them a bit of an injection, a bit of a push, and you know, they can hopefully improve their form before that game. I mean, it's been inevitable for a long time, really, that Allegri was going to go. I mean, he'd already confirmed that he was leaving at the end of the season. I do have, and I think the last time I spoke to him on the show, I do have some sympathy for him. I do think that whoever is coaching Milan with this set of players, the resources that they're having to work with, would struggle. But at the same time, I think Allegri should have been doing better than he has been doing over the last kind of 18 months. And ultimately, that's the reason why he's been fired.
It's going to be tough for Seedorf, because he's going to go into a club where everybody, much like still reveres him and loves him, in the same way that Kaká returning could have been very difficult had he not got off to a good start, as he has done so far back in his second spell at the Rossoneri. But coming back as a manager, loved as a player, idolised by many at the club, he's got a real chance of tarnishing his reputation with a poor side that isn't playing well and taking the reins of that side in a disappointing season.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's jumping into the deep end, isn't he? It's a gamble. I mean, it's always a gamble when you hire a coach who doesn't have any coaching experience and, you know, who's young. Seedorf is 37 and he's still playing in Brazil. So, you know, it's definitely a gamble. But, you know, he's a very intelligent man, Seedorf. He's got charisma. He speaks like half a dozen languages fluently. Mm. And, you know, so he will bring, he's got good ideas as well. Our understanding is that he's going to be implementing a kind of an AX kind of training system at Milan, whereby he'll have individual coaches who will be focused on specific areas. He'll have departmental coaches, so a goalkeeping coach, defending coach, midfield coach, attacking coach, but plus all other individual coaches, such as an athletics coach, a psychological coach, which is how they do it at Ajax, and it's been obviously very successful because they've had one of the best training regimes and youth systems in the history of the game. So it'll be interesting to see how he does. He definitely is an intelligent man and does have ideas, but at the same time, you know, if you haven't got the players to work with, it doesn't matter kind of what you do off the pitch.
I'm sure that defending coach is going to have his work cut out at the moment with Milan and that leaky back four that they've got, and Domenico Berardi making easy work, really, with his four strikes on the weekend. How much had you noticed Berardi this season down at Sassuolo? Obviously, easy to kind of overlook sometimes the sides in the bottom of Serie A, Carlo. But he's been scoring goals this year. He's got 11 so far now in 13 appearances. This 19-year-old, how much is he kind of being spoken about as a youngster in Italy?
He has been spoken about since last season, even when he was in Serie B. I personally haven't seen enough of him for me to make a real bold prediction of just how good I think he can become. Mm. I'm going a little bit secondhand on him. I have seen him play. I've seen some games, but I wouldn't like to make a bold prediction yet. He's clearly a natural talent. You can tell that straight away in a player. He's got a beautiful left foot, beautiful balance, the way that he cuts in. And you can see he's got those instincts as well in the penalty box. The second goal against Milan being a perfect example, the way that he spun shot into the bottom corner. So he's a natural. We're just going to have to see how he develops, really. I wouldn't want to put too much pressure on him. I think he was aided on Sunday by the fact that Milan's defending was absolutely horrific. Daniele Bonero, who's been, you know, touted by some, including Franco Baresi, for an Italy recall. I mean, if Italy play him during the World Cup, then they've got no chance. So I think he was aided by that.
Yeah, he did have a lot of help on the weekend. In general, Carlo, do you think Milan have got any chance of pulling off a turnaround at all from this horrific start to the season? What would now be a successful finish for them sat in 11th?
Europa League. I think that's the only thing that they can hope for. There's absolutely zero possibility of them getting a Champions League place. Yeah. And I mean, how many points are they behind Juventus now? I think it's 30, isn't it? I mean, the best turnaround they can hope for is that they get into the Europa League. They possibly, you know, they can try. They've got a couple of Italian match in midweek against Spezia, so they win that game. They could potentially challenge for the Coppa Italia if they take it seriously. as the Champions League, even though I said at the time the draw that I wouldn't completely write them off against Atletico Madrid, and I still wouldn't. You know, there's still time for them to get their form around, and they've got enough big name players in their team. But right now, you know, it looks like they're going to be extras in the Champions League pretty soon as well. So I think what the best they can do, Europa League and plan for next season.
I suppose every snowball in hell does have a small chance of getting somewhere. Carlo, just finally, a couple of other quick stories. And obviously there was the big one last week for US soccer fans about Michael Bradley returning to North America, going to Toronto. Roma put out a tweet saying thank you very much to Michael Bradley, even though he's not been there a year and a half now at Roma, but has been a solid performer for them. How much has Bradley made an impact on Italian football, do you think, as a reputation as being an American going across into Italy, and do you think Roma will miss him for this second half of the season?
I think he's had an excellent Serie A career. He was fantastic at Chievo, got his big move to Roma. Last season at Roma, did very well in the centre of midfield. You always knew what you were going to get from Bradley, you know, non-stop running, a fierce tackler, great stamina, great fitness. He's a very, very good player at the age of 26 to be moving back to the MLS. It is a very, very big surprise because he has the ability, there's no doubt about it, to be playing at the very least for Europa League side, a Europa League standard side in any of the major leagues, England, Italy, Spain, Germany. He could play for top six side easily in those countries and in some cases a Champions League standard team as well. He was just a little bit unlucky really this year that Roma have got such an excellent centre midfield that he became that fourth centre midfielder who couldn't get into the first team. So he was a little bit unlucky really this season. I'm just very surprised that he's moved back to the MLS. I'd like to think it's for family reasons, but you know I have my doubts whether he's done it for the money. I hope not, but it's a shame. I mean, as for whether Roma are going to miss him, I think that they've signed Raja Nainggolan as a direct replacement, and Nainggolan is a superior player to Bradley, and he has the potential to become a really, really top class player in my opinion. I've been a big fan of him for a long, long time. A colleague of mine actually scouted him years ago when he was at Piacenza and said, "Watch out for this guy." So I've had my eye on him for a good 5-6 years, and I think he's a great, great player. And he was absolutely, I watched Roma play at the weekend. He was absolutely brilliant in centre midfield. So I think Roma have actually got four top centre midfielders. I don't see Roma missing Bradley.
It's going to be tough for Bradley had he stuck around to get into that Roma side, but now back in Toronto. And just finally, Carlo, Fiorentina, that 0-0 draw against Torino. Fiorentina have gone off the boil slightly. So much talk at the beginning of the year about their fantastic attacking squad going forward. Be as brief as you want, because I know we're taking up far too much of your time here, but that Fiorentina side, it has just gone off the boil slightly in terms of its intensity, and obviously not being helped by Rossi's recent injury as well.
Yeah, I think Fiorentina have been a little bit unlucky. I think at the turn of the year, they were the one team that could have broken into that top three of Juventus, Roma and Napoli, which kind of looked nailed on. Now, though, having lost Rossi to a long-term injury, he's definitely going to be out for 2 to 3 months. If he needs an operation, that'll be his season and World Cup over, which is really tragic. Then it's going to be hard now for Fiorentina. They've lost their best player, Mario Gomez. He's been out for months and his comeback keeps getting put further and further back, and no one really knows when he's going to be back. So they've lost all that firepower in attack. Still some fantastic quality in midfield, Cuadrado and Borja Valero, but they lack that goal scorer right now. And even though, I mean, it looks as though Alessandro Matri is going to be coming in from Milan this month. I mean, he's scored one goal all season, so I wouldn't bank on him turning it around either. So it's a shame, but I think it looks like Fiorentina might just fall away now from that top three.
At least it takes him off the Rossoneri's hands for a bit, though. Somebody as useless to not deal with at the San Siro, at least for Seedorf coming in. Carlo, mate, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show, man. We thoroughly enjoy getting you on and talking all things European football and in particular Italian football with you, mate. And we look forward to catching up with you very soon indeed. Thanks so much, man.
Yeah, pleasure, Ollie. 16, mate.
Cheers, Carlo. Carlo Garganessi there from Goal.com joining us here on World Football Daily, talking about all things Italian football and giving us the rundown on Allegri, whether it's the right decision to make or not. I mean, some people will say that it's not smart to do it now, but I think you have to admit that Allegri wasn't getting the job done all season anyway, and if he's going, you might as well go right off this season. Give Seedorf a chance to come in, start to kind of lay the foundations early on now, and then see what happens. And we will see what happens for AC Milan as the season continues for them. A big thanks there once again to Carlo joining us here on WFD. I mean, I've been moaning about it from the start of the show. You've heard Carlo's thoughts as well there on the FIFA World 11, the whole Ballon d'Or process in total. Let's get a US perspective. And of course, that means that joining me as always is Rafa, mate. Raf, the Ballon d'Or yesterday, first and foremost, did you watch any of that ceremony at all?
No, not really, man. I caught a lot of the highlights, primarily because I was at work while I was going down. But I did get to see a lot of the ceremony, you know what I mean? Just through replays and through highlights and FIFA videos on YouTube and stuff. So, you know, I feel like I enjoyed it pretty much. I feel like I've gotten a pretty round perspective on it, or a different perspective, if you will. So, yeah, what are you thinking, man?
Well, I think it's like an hour and a half. I'm never going to get back again.
Yeah, same. Like, no, I probably spent more time kind of doing the peripheral review of it through like the blogs and through, like I said, YouTube, on FIFA YouTube's channel. I mean, can I say this? I think it was very classy of Leo Messi to kind of straight come out and say that Ronaldo deserved it.
He didn't think that, though, did he?
Well,
because Messi didn't vote for him. No, let's not.
That's very true.
Let's not mess about here. Like, football is pretty much a child's playground when it comes to bitchiness and backstabbiness and this kind of lack of clear respect for each other. You look at the...
Well, no. Just hold on. Look, that's almost also a business decision. Like, you have to, because of, and this also goes back to the fact that it is kind of like a little boy's playground. They have to because of the, you know, their country allegiances, because of like their club allegiances and marketing allegiances.
Because those, they're children.
Not because of the children.
Dude, they're like...
Yes, they are children. Yes, they are. And I've never doubted, you know, I've never said anything other than that. They're giant boys playing around. And they'll never grow up. But this is why, you know, he had to. Messi had to not give them that, because it's essentially going against people who are paying money to that he's working.
Look,
for.
Let's just take it, because I've held out on kind of disclosing kind of these details in the show just yet. So let's take a look at how some of these people voted. Okay, Lionel Messi voted for Iniesta, Xavi, and Neymar.
All Barcelona.
Oh my
players.
Goodness, yeah, all Barca players. Okay, Thiago Silva. This one's a reasonably fair representation. Lionel Messi, top. Fine. He has to put Zlatan in there because of the PSG link, and then Cristiano Ronaldo, which again, you know, that's kind of childish, throwing Zlatan in there because he's not as good as Ronaldo or Messi. Every single one of these people should have had one of these as the number one and the other one as number two. Unless you're going with Ribery, because obviously we still think, I think that Ribery deserved more of a shout than he seemed to get as a chance of winning this award. Steven Gerrard goes Cristiano Ronaldo, Messi, and then Suarez. Okay, you can kind of understand that because Suarez has been exceptional this first half of the season. Obviously, there was the incident at the back end of last year, and he missed plenty of games of that because of the biting incident, and was obviously banned from the end of the season and obviously beginning part of this season as well. But, you know, Suarez has still been an exceptional player in 2013. You can't argue against that. Hugo Lloris puts Ribery as number one. Frenchman, you could argue that. Neuer and Bale. But again, I think Lloris has got him with Neuer for the goalkeeper kind of club, so to speak. And Bale might be just a legitimate vote there. Philipp Lahm goes with Ribery, obviously a Bayern Munich kind of tie there. Ronaldo and Messi, but the right three at least. Gianluigi Buffon goes with Pirlo, then Ronaldo, then Messi. Like, come on. Gianluigi, it's not hard to put two and two together. Italian voting for the Italian. Van Persie, the Dutchman, votes for the Dutchman, Arjen Robben. Huh, funny how that happened, isn't it? And then Zlatan, and then Ronaldo. Cristiano Ronaldo goes for Falcao, Bale and Ozil. And I think that's more like Ronaldo kind of going, well, it doesn't matter what I put because it's going to be me or Messi. So I might as well, you know, oh yeah, Falcao, sure, why not? But well, at the same time, still unwilling to vote for Messi. Unwilling to put Messi down on that, Cristiano Ronaldo. Won't put him down. Iker Casillas puts Ronaldo first. The Real Madrid connection you got going on there, maybe. Then Ribery, then Robin. And Zlatan goes with Ribery, Messi and Ronaldo. Picks the right three. And I don't think he's got too much to kind of intermingle with that. I think Zlatan's could be the kind of vote, really, when we look at the parity in these things. Alejandro Sabella, the Argentinian coach, puts, guess what? Lionel Messi, but he does include Ronaldo as well. Philippe Scolari goes with Ronaldo, Messi, and even
Ronaldo ahead of Messi too. I think he put
he's got Messi number one, Alejandro Sabella, but he still did vote for Cristiano Ronaldo as well. Philippe Luis Scolari, Big Phil, goes with Ronaldo, Messi, Ibrahimovic. Roy Hodgson, ever the gentleman, goes with Ronaldo, Ibrahimovic, Van Persie. Roy, I don't know what you were taking before you were voting there, but you did yourself proud yesterday in handing out the managerial awards. I tell you that, Roy, you did us proud there. And do you see, by the way, England involved in three of the awards, both the male and female managerial awards read out by Roy Hodgson stupendously, may I add. Good old Roy leading the line for England, and we're involved in the Puskas Award as well, thank you very much, because if it wasn't for Joe Hart and a few bits of sloppy defending, I'm sure Zlatan Ibrahimovic wouldn't have been able to score that. So Zlatan, I think you owe England a big thanks for that.
I thought it was really funny that, like, I read on a couple of English blogs yesterday, Juice, that, you know, they kind of kept bringing up the technicality that it was, like, the actual goal was scored in like 2012 instead of 2013. Yeah.
But it was inside the closing of the deadline for the 2012 Puskas, so
sure,
couldn't be involved. So you got to have a cut-off point on these things. It's not like you'll have a goal that gets scored in, you know, November, December that can jump in at that late notice and get the right votes and be kind of included fairly in the 2012 voting process. So I understand that. Quickly, we'll run through the last ones of these. Didier Deschamps goes with the Frenchman Ribery. Oh, my goodness. Then Ronaldo, then Ibrahimovic. Cesare Prandelli goes with Pirlo. The Italian goes to the Italian. Then Lahm, then Lewandowski. Very peculiar answers there from Prandelli for his top three players. Louis van Gaal goes with Ribery, Müller and Robin. Did van Gaal and Ribery ever work together? I'm pretty sure there's a link there. I'll have to check on that one. Paolo Bento goes with Ronaldo, obviously the Portuguese coach going with Ronaldo and not voting for Messi. Vicente del Bosque goes Xavi, Iniesta, Ribery. Very peculiar indeed from del Bosque, thinking his two midfielders deserved to win it. And Eric Hamer goes with Ibrahimovic first, then Messi, then Ronaldo. I just think there's so many kind of coaches and links to the players that were voted for first in this that it's not voting for the best player. It's voting for your mates or voting for your player. I think it's really pathetic when you look at some of these. I'm not saying that there aren't reasons for all of these players to be considered, you know, the best players in the world. But at the moment in this time, it was really going to only come down to Ribery, Messi or Ronaldo. Those were the three outstanding players from last year. You know, I think Zlatan, any other year, would have been in with a chance with it, had Bayern not won the treble. But that was unfortunate for Zlatan. And I think that, you know, maybe, I think Luis Suarez will be, if he continues the form he's in, will be a candidate for next year in the top three, but not this year. Similarly, Gareth Bale was a half shout, but I don't think it was a strong shout to be involved in this. So, look, I know I keep ranting and raving about the whole Ballon d'Or thing yesterday, as I say, but it is just voting for your mates. And
it's a popularity and it's
bitchiness, you know, like the fact that Ronaldo and Messi couldn't even bring themselves to vote for the other person in any of their top three. It's just sad. Like, it's really sad because these two, you know, when you get kind of like, I don't know, Kobe and LeBron, arguably at points, two of the best basketball players in the NBA. And they both still have this like great mutual respect for each other, at least in front of the cameras. They may hate each other off camera, but in front of the cameras, there's very much a, well, he's a great player, you know.
I don't know, and I'm a great player.
These two seem bitchy.
I don't think it'd be any different if you put the same style of award and draw and voting system.
Yeah, but you know Larry Bird would have voted for Magic.
The old NBA, when Larry Bird and Magic Johnson were playing against each other, I highly doubt that they would vote for each other.
Oh, I'm sure they would.
They respect each other, but just because of the situation and because of the true competitors that they were, I highly doubt that they would vote for each other. Quick point that I wanted to make. Even Messi and Ronaldo's voting tablets, for example, were so calculated. Ronaldo's in particular, he made sure to kind of vote for the right outliers, you know, like to make sure that his vote was
credible ones,
thrown
but,
away.
Yeah, the credible like, ones knew, that weren't going to affect the outcome.
Right. He knew Falcao had no chance, but he still put him like top. He also put in, his teammate Bale, which is a huge kind of like a tap up to his teammate. Like, oh yeah, this is me putting you under my wing.
Yeah. I was going to say, how cozy is that? So here's the love in
Madrid.
The
same goes for Messi's Neymar vote. You know, there's a lot of kind of talk in the blogs and news.
Oh, are they upsetting each other? No, I love him. Look,
yeah,
I think he's like the third best player in the world.
I voted for him. Yeah, he's that talented. I really rate this guy.
I actually think he's better than me. I didn't even vote for myself. You know, and he's definitely better than that Cristiano Ronaldo jack-off over there at Real Madrid. That's for sure. Oh, yeah. That guy, Neymar could... Ronaldo should be shining Neymar's boots. That's what I think. As Lionel Messi. Yeah.
Before we get... away from
well we need to I need to ask you about
I feel like you wanted to kind of get there pretty soon. I had to ask you this because I had just recently seen this. Did you hear about the conversation Jurgen Klopp and Zlatan Ibrahimovic had on television?
No, I've not heard of this one just yet.
Oh, so according to some recordings, Zlatan Ibrahimovic has told Jurgen Klopp he would play for Dortmund for free. He would literally move to Dortmund on the free, and it's quoted. I think I found it on Eurosport Juice.
Is this is this one of these kind of, you know, the after party, the Ballon d'Or? Maybe Zlatan's had a few too much.
It was at a gala. It was like at a post ceremony gala.
A few too many beers afterwards. You know, Zlatan's giving all this. I should have done it. It should have been me up there. I tell you what, Jürgen, you come here. Come here, because those Bayern guys last year, they didn't deserve it. Nah, man, it should have been all you. Just like this should have been all Zlatan. I tell you what, man, you and me, we pair up.
We could
take down that Bayern München, more like Bayern Punchen.
How amazing would that be? And seriously, I will find it to you and send it to you.
Well, it's
I saw this earlier.
It's the best person to replace Robert Lewandowski with, the better version of Robert Lewandowski. And George Mateus. George Mateus, I'm calling you out.
Yeah.
I'm calling you out, George Mateus, because George was saying yesterday on Twitter that Zlatan wasn't as good as Lewandowski last year.
Ooh.
George. And I'm making this public. I'm going public. I mean, I know Twitter's pretty public anyway, but you know, those of you that didn't see mine or George's feed late yesterday, I'm telling you right now. Look, Lewandowski helped drag Dortmund through the Champions League and was very impressive in the Champions League, but he didn't pull it out in the league in the same way that he had done. Whereas Zlatan did it in both competitions and was the backbone of that PSG side for the last 2 years. Already, I know it's only based on a 12-month voting, but it.
Okay, here's
Zlatan,
the actual
George, Zlatan's better. Zlatan's
here's
better.
The actual conversation that I have on a website. It looks legit, man. I'm telling you, Zlatan Ibrahimovic says, "When are you bringing me to Dortmund?" And Jurgen Klopp says, "Oh, please, I will have to sell the whole team." Zlatan's response: "No, I come for free." Jurgen replies. You come for free, and then he turns to the TV cameras and he says, "Did you hear that? Did you hear what he said?" To which Zlatan responds, "I'll come for free to Dortmund. This conversation is not for the president of Paris." So I'm serious. If this was to go down, think of how crazy this mercenary would be to have literally played probably through every top club.
Every top league
across Europe,
He just he needs the Bundesliga to complete the set. He's got Serie A. He's got La Liga.
Absolutely.
He needs the Premier League as well. But I'm
and
sure.
What, and what an anti-hero he would be to the Bayern, you know, kind of giant.
Oh, it'd be it'd be so good.
Oh my goodness.
And do you not think that that would help Dortmund raise their stakes in keeping people like Gundogan, like Royce? You know, they'd be flocking to play with Zlatan. Oh
they would give up some of their salaries just to stay. And be a part of the revolution.
Yeah, I'll take a pay cut just to be around this guy kind of thing. I want to see what this thing's all about. Oh, my goodness, he's that damn good. The winner of the Puskas Award there, Rafa, talking about Zlatan possibly going from PSG to Dortmund on a free. Are you kidding me? As I say on all the NBA coverage, are you kidding me? Oh, that would be one hell of a day. Rafa, I need to talk to you about as well the World 11, this dream team that's picked out by FIFA. Every single year. No Premier League players, as always. Some people saying that maybe Yaya Toure should have been thrown in there. Look, don't get me. Yaya Toure is fantastic. And if he has a year of playing at his peak, deserves to be in that side. But you can't start saying Yaya Toure should be in there when Schweinsteiger was left out. Let's just put it that way. So FIFA read it out. I mean, most people have written this down as a 4-2-3-1. So first and foremost, I have a big problem with this side's chemistry in general, because FIFA read it out yesterday as a 4-3-3 with a midfield of Xavi, Iniesta and Ribery, and then a front three of Messi, Ronaldo and Ibrahimovic. Now, first and foremost, that is a front three that is never going to pass to each other, like ever. if they make four passes to each other in a game, I would be amazed. If that ever
I don't know if you notice this, and this is only to back you up, Juice, but in the actual kind of like, you know, ceremony presentation, when they bring up all the players and stuff, the defenders all stand kind of side by side, even the goalkeepers kind of, you know, next to them. But like you said, those three up top, there's a distinct space between them. You know?
And you think Messi's... Like you think Messi's gonna sit in the in the middle in that with Zlatan? Chance. Those two aren't gonna get on very well fighting over the center of the field. I mean, like I said, I find the whole thing so peculiar. It is like kind of 5-year-old kids again, as you say, Raf. They were stood kind of slightly more apart from each other. Obviously, you had Iniesta, Xavi, and Ribery were stood reasonably close with each other because, you know, Iniesta, Xavi played together, probably very good friends, and Ribery, you know, he's harmless to them. He obviously embarrassed them, helped embarrass them last year in the Champions League. But I don't think there's any beef from that, because at the end of the day, Bayern were just a better side. But and then you have this front three that obviously there's so much kind of egotistical, overinflated ego banter that which must go through their heads at all these times. You know, like when they're asking them all those really wooden questions. And like Ruud Gullit, it's like, oh, and what would you think it would be like to play with these guys? Oh, I think it would be fantastic. They're great players. But it's said through like gritted teeth almost from each other.
Right.
But anyway, I digress.
Like they themselves would be like, freaking hate it, man. You don't understand. I hate these players. I don't want to play with them. Don't ever put me on the same stage with them again, ever in my life.
But I want to ask you a few questions now, Raf, about this World 11. Are there any changes you would make? Because I've got three. So there'd be three definite changes that I'd make, possibly four.
Well, I mean, for one, I would either give up a defender and drop Sergio Ramos, as much as I love him, and as much as, you know, every haircut he's ever had.
I mean, the guy's the best-looking really guy in that back four. Let's not beat around the bush. But, you know...
Every facial hair is very particularly manicured.
FIFA seemed to love this guy.
Yeah. And he, no matter what he does, no matter how many penalties he gives away, no matter how many times he gets sent off, he's still rated just so highly. I would probably drop Sergio Ramos and bring on, I don't know, Juice. Anybody else? I mean, really. I was thinking
Dante or Van Buyten from Bayern. One of those
Dante
two
is a huge shout for me. I like Dante a lot, particularly because I feel like he's versatile. I feel like he can not just, you know, be a solid defender in the back, but also push play up and be a part of the attack.
Well, and also, okay, so last year's was dominated by Madrid and Barca, and even though Bayern was such an incredible side last year as well as this year, It was still dominated by the two Spanish clubs. Now Bayern have, you know, two consecutive Champions League finals, one win, obviously a treble, five trophies in general for them last year. It's a fantastic year for them. Yet we've still only got, what, three players in there? When Madrid and Barca have dominated this, because they've dominated football for the last few years, but suddenly Bayern do it and there are less candidates in there. I mean, you know, Schweinsteiger, as I say, I think Dante or Van Buiten have both been better than Sergio Ramos. I think you need to find you need to find a right back to replace Dani Alves as well, because I'm 100% sure that he wasn't the best right back in the world last year. I'd take out Xavi, because although he's great, both Xavi and Iniesta are great, but I think there were players that could have had better years than them. Such as Sebastian Schweinsteiger would come in. You know, you can't replace you can't change that attack. Whatever George Mateus says about Lewandowski, I'd never change that front three. Those were the best three strikers in the world last year. You could argue maybe that Falcao deserved to be in there, possibly a Cavani, but I think in general it's Zlatan, Messi and Ronaldo, the right three. You obviously can't take Ribery out. You know, he's an exceptional player. And he's one of the top three for the Ballon d'Or. There's no way you can drop him out. But there are those three changes, as I say, Ramos, Alves, and Xavi, possibly Iniesta as well, to come out. So I want to know who people would change in that FIFA World 11. Let us know. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter. 310-909-8483 is the rant line, and of course, the Facebook page as well.
You would not be wrong, Jews, if you were to say, well, what is the current Bayern lineup?
Yeah, I mean, you could very much argue that, you know.
I mean, five trophies. What? Five? What? One? What? Okay. Yes.
You know, Javi Martinez was fantastic when he was fit last year.
Yeah.
I mean.
This again, even this is quite the popularity contest, and who talks about you, who writes about you, how many stories you get in the
Marco newspaper. Royce has never really had a shout for any of this kind of stuff either, and he's been a phenomenal player to watch.
And another player with great hair.
And you could stick him in that midfield, surely.
Yeah.
Surely. I did very much enjoy, there was somebody put a thing out on Twitter yesterday that was the FIFA World 11 is very interesting, especially when it would become a FIFA World 10 once Sergio Ramos gets himself sent off, which I thought, you know, was very apt indeed. And unfortunately, there weren't any more zingers came out from that Twitter account. It was somebody from ESPN now. I can't remember who it was. One of the presenters from ESPN came out with that. So very top marks to the chap that thought that little gag up, that's for sure. It's all ridiculously drawn out and gets really boring after a while. You just want them to name the award winners and get lost. Jupp Heynckes gets the Manager of the Year for 2013 after half a year of work. Is that fair? I mean,
yes.
Is that fair? You know,
yes.
Come on. He only worked for half the year, as did Alex Ferguson. These were the two of the top three. Are you kidding me?
I think he actually won. How many trophies did he win without working? Because let's be honest, the World Club Cup
and the
trophy.
And the German Super Cup as well.
Ah, there you go. Super Cup. So there's just name me another manager who won two trophies without even managing.
And to be honest, if they win anything else this year, it's still the majority of his side, isn't it?
Still is,
and Pep's been playing one deep rather than two in the midfield, but it's Jupp's legacy that's winning these at the moment, that's for sure. Pele winning the honorary Ballon d'Or as well. Very nice kind of FU to Diego Maradona there. Everybody loves Pele. He's a magnificent player, a great ambassador for football, but it's sometimes just a little bit, okay, it's Brazil, it's football, here comes Pele. Like, he's everywhere. Everywhere.
I'm with you. Look, you know what, Juice? That's so funny that you bring that up, because I recently went to lunch.
With Pele. I ordered some Brazilian food. I was talking about football, and Pele showed up.
Pele, Subway, this is what happened. I literally went to lunch, went to a Subway, and sure enough, Pele is just kind of chilling on an ad that's like right in the window, gigantic, big. Who's in front with the soccer ball? Pele. Who's behind him? Like Blake Griffin.
Yeah, Michael Phelps. Yeah, they're all. Right, they're
Michael Phelps, all these other, you know, like young current stars. And who's the soccer star? It's Pele.
Yeah. Oh.
I get it, but still, I mean, yeah. And yesterday, the way that it kind of lifted up Ronaldo's son and tried to put him on like the podium, it was just kind of
awkward.
It was almost like a joke. It was almost too much of a farce. Like I can't. I'm starting to not take him seriously. That's all.
Can we also sort out Lionel Messi's tailor? Like somebody needs to go to Lionel Messi and say, put on a normal suit for once at these damn things. Like we've had the stripes, we've had the polka dots. Now we've got the everybody else is there in a smart black tux. And in that World 11 photo, especially, it looks so awkward because Messi's there like, oh, look at me, I'm in bright red. It's like, jeez. Oh, damn it, Lionel, can't you just dress up smart and sophisticated for once rather than trying to like show off and be all garish and stuff?
Depending on the light, it kind of looks like it's almost crushed velvet. It's just strange. Yeah. You know, again, going with the bow tie, I don't mind the bow tie, but he has had the loud bow tie every now and then. It's just, I'm just saying.
Look, if you're going tux,
if he came to Hollywood, I think we could get him, you know, matched up with somebody.
If you're going tux like that, then surely you got to go with white or with black. That's what, you know, white suit or black suit with the bow tie. That's what it's got to be done. The other thing I want to ask and try and get people to get in on this as well is if there was the World 11, voting for next year now over this like first half a season basically, who would your team be? I doubt there'd be any representatives from AC Milan in it, obviously, considering the nightmare season that they're having. But my wish came true and Inter stumbled against Chievo, only a 1-1 draw for Inter last night, which I was quite pleased about. And we'll run through the Coppa del Rey and the Coppa Italia fixtures coming up this evening. And, of course, mighty Sheffield Wednesday involved against Macclesfield this evening as well in the FA Cup replays. We'll run through those fixtures come the end of the show. But, for instance, would Suarez now replace Zlatan if you're going on this first half of the season alone? How many of those Manchester United players would be in consideration? Would Rooney be up there and worth be throwing in with a cheeky punt? Would Neymar be involved in that World 11?
I'd drop Messi for Suarez right now.
You drop Messi for Suarez?
Yeah, I'm keeping Messi, or I'm keeping Zlatan and Ronaldo. I think I'd drop Messi for Suarez just for this year.
Well, that's controversial.
Messi's hardly played this season.
That is true. He was out from November till now, so a month and a half kind of thing. But yeah,
training ground hat tricks don't count. In my book, I'm just saying.
well, a few days ago, you were raving all about Messi.
No, I love Messi, dude. He is, I mean, in my opinion, probably the best player up there with Cristiano Ronaldo. I mean, to me, those guys just in a class of their own, and it's just not worth really arguing to anybody, you know, aside from, you know, me, you, maybe the audience a little bit. Like, I don't mind, like, the odd banter and kind of, you sticking up for one or the other and just kind of arguing the other's point, being, you know, just arguing for the sake of arguing with the homies. But really, let's be honest, between you and me, Juice, these guys in a class of their own. Why not just sit back and enjoy it sometimes, right?
Yeah. Yeah, completely. Completely.
But yeah, no, I am dropping Messi right now for this World 11 for the current half season.
Does Yaya Touré make it in for this half season?
Yes.
Because of his performances in the Premier League so far with City.
Absolutely.
Does Negredo or Aguero deserve being with a shout for that as well? Because Negredo's been, as it's been said, the beast so far. I mean, I know we're just looking at Premier League at the moment for new additions for this side. I mean, obviously the usual kings reign supreme, although you could throw in maybe a Diego Costa or a Koke or a Alberto Turan as well into this mix from Atletico Madrid. I'd like to know, people on this first half season of European football, who would be thrown in to your World 11? Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 3109098483 is the rant line, the Facebook page as well. Both Rafa and I'm sure, will be able to get our half-season World 11 sorted for tomorrow.
I might drop Neuer for Thibaut Courtois or something.
I was
going to
say, what about Courtois? I mean, do you think he should have been in with a shout in general for the... he's been fantastic at Atletico.
Maybe not last season's, you know, like, you know, if we're talking about the current FIFA's World 11, I think Neuer deserves that. But for this current half season, you could argue that Neuer's had absolutely nothing to do. So he's hardly had to prove himself.
Another clean sheet. Yeah, no saves either. Yeah, it was great.
That's what I'm saying. So you could argue that, you know, other keepers have had to kind of rise to the occasion and actually participate in matches and therefore are more deserving of the award right now. That's all I'm saying.
Possibly so. Possibly so. We've heard from Raf. We've heard from Carlo. Now we want to hear from you about the Ballon d'Or and the awards that were given out last night. Commiserations to Abby Wambach, who did not collect a second successive FIFA World Women's Player of the
Year.
Question
to you, Juice. Last question. I'm sorry. We'll get through this Ballon d'Or day. I promise you. Do you think that in anywhere in Ronaldo's mind, does he feel he needs to kind of go on and win three more? Just to match, like, is that any part of the drive for him?
I don't think he needs to match Lionel Messi.
Yeah.
I
completely agree. If I'm Ronaldo, I'm like, I'm just excited about getting him.
Quite a lot of the Messi ones have been very close calls between him and Ronaldo.
Yeah.
But this one, I think most people we think it's going to be Ronaldo. There's no way it shouldn't be anybody else. It was no surprise that
even
Ronaldo
before
won.
The extended voting deadline.
yeah, even before the extended voting deadline, I think we all knew it was going to be Ronaldo, and his tears of joy masking, I'm sure, what was that evil villain laugh behind those tears of joy of, ha, I finally toppled you, Lionel. I bet that made it, I sincerely think that made it a little bit sweeter for those guys. And of course, you can see Ronaldo stood with all of his Real Madrid teammates showing off his Ballon d'Or, gutted that Zlatan didn't decide to interrupt the ceremony and do what myself and Graham Hunter were talking about yesterday of the keepy-ups in front of everybody claiming, oh, I should have won this, ha, ha, ha. But unfortunately, it didn't happen. There is plenty of football coming your way this evening from the Coppa Italia and, of course, from the Coppa del Rey and FA Cup as well. Lazio take on Parma in the Coppa Italia. Caen take on Saint-Étienne in the Coupe de France and the Coppa del Rey. Sees Almeria taking on Racing Santander and Atletico Madrid taking on Valencia. That will be a corker. You know what? I was gutted. That Villarreal game, I really wanted to watch, and it wasn't on. And it produced 6 goals, and I was livid, absolutely livid. It wasn't on UK television. That was disgusting, absolutely terrible. I had to deal with the last kind of half hour of Arsenal against Aston Villa when I got back from football yesterday evening. In the FA Cup third round, we've got third round ties that didn't take place initially. Charlton taking on Oxford, Birmingham taking on Bristol Rovers, and Bournemouth taking on Burton Albion, with third round replays for Watford against Bristol City, Peterborough United against Kidderminster. A lot of these people, I'm sure, won't be too fussed about. MK Dons taking on Wigan. Fulham take on Norwich in an all-Premier League tie. Preston North End take on Ipswich. Plymouth Argyle take on Port Vale. And Sheffield Wednesday take on Macclesfield Town. And then when we beat Macclesfield...
You're on Sheffield Wednesday.
Nah, I'm just saving the best till last, aren't I? And then when we beat Macclesfield, we'll take on Rochdale in the next round. It's going to be walking through to the fifth round of the FA Cup, mate. Don't you worry about it. A massive thanks to all of you guys for listening to us waffle on about the Ballon d'Or and how boring it can be. I hope it wasn't as boring to recap over, that's for sure. I've actually thoroughly enjoyed today's show, as I enjoy every single show here on WFD. A big thanks to Carlo Garganese for joining us as well, giving us his thoughts on world and European football in general, and of course on the Ballon d'Or from yesterday. And a big thanks, as always, to Raf and your very good selves for joining us once again. Remember, show at worldfootballdaily.com is where to catch us, at WFootballDaily on Twitter. Gio's been writing on the Kickabout blog. Check out his most recent stuff. And check out both our Twitter handles at @juice_Wilson. Of course, Raf is at
Jerz Rafa. That's me. I'm Jerz Rafa. That's Jerz. At Jerz Rafa on Twitter.
For all those off WFD hilarious banteruskis that Rafa likes to throw down the Twitter feed every so often. And we will catch you at the same time tomorrow on Wednesday's edition of the show. Take care. Enjoy your football tonight. There's plenty more coming this week. We'll see you at the same time tomorrow.